podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Lantronics, maker of the XPrint server. Print from any Android phone, tablet, Chromebook, or Kindle Fire to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 159, recorded on Tuesday, April 29th, 2014. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Owl.
I'm Ron Richards.
I'm Gina Trapani.
Welcome, team. Gina, you feeling better?
Much better. Hope. Thank you very much.
Okay.
The kid plague has abated for now.
Oh, man, it's been crazy. I feel you. I feel like I've had some sort of sickness in the house about every week since the beginning of the year, so...
I'm convinced they have a super immune system now, but until next time.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't be like, oh, except for this one. Oh, okay.
Right.
We'll
be back.
We are super excited to welcome back to the show Derek Ross, writer at Fandroid, and just all-around good guy. Of course, you do a lot of posting on Google Plus as well, so if you're on Google Plus, people, you probably recognize
Derek. One of the fellow ghosts, you know, that are part of The Walking Dead over there. But
yes, right.
Aside, yeah, you can find me... Definitely on Google Plus.
Yeah, you know, I saw that. I didn't include the Vic and Dotra thing.
I was surprised to see it. Yeah.
Well, because it wasn't necessarily Android.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure what to do on that. I guess before we get started, what do we think?
Well,
is Google Plus The Walking Dead? Is it a...
No, because I saw somebody, I forget who commented on it. Somebody made some comment about the number of reactions they get to photos posted on Instagram or Facebook compared to Google Plus, and their findings were, I think, the same as a lot of your findings, Jason. I think that you have, and maybe, you know, everybody here, is that the Google Plus engagement seems to be way, way higher.
Yeah.
But
oh, my, yeah.
Yeah, but is that because we're in a group that is... with engaged people on Google Plus, right. And does that represent the rest of the world? You know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I don't feel as if Google Plus is The Walking Dead or a dead kind of platform. It seems very alive. It seems very vibrant.
Yeah,
I full-heartedly agree. It's very, very vibrant. I mean, it's so much of an interest network where, you know, you can find different people of, you know, similar interests and engage with them and. In a totally different way than I've personally been able to engage with people on, let's say, Twitter or Facebook or, you know, Pinterest or something like that. So, I mean, sure, it might not be the network for everybody, but that's why we have, you know, multiple different choices to use. But personally, I'm pretty much a nobody outside of Google Plus, but on there, I'd like to think that a lot of people know who the heck I am. So I'm a big advocate for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll give credit to ScootRex in the chat room, who reminded me, it was Andy Anako who posted that.
Okay.
About seeing more interaction on Google Plus. So.
Yeah, I mean, I post differently to different services because of that reason, right? Twitter, I can reach a large amount of people quickly with Twitter. If I expect a conversation, I don't go to Twitter, or I might put it there and just know that I'm just kind of putting it out there and I might get a couple of responses here and there. Google Plus has that kind of threaded approach that, at least in the technology world and the kind of thing that, you know, we're all here on this show talking about because we're passionate and enthusiastic about it. There's a great community on Google Plus that's also passionate and enthusiastic about that. Yeah. So when they see a post, suddenly it becomes this really big engaging conversation. And that's of high value. Does that extend to the families that maybe will, you know, go towards Facebook because it, you know, everybody that they know is there? I don't know, but I don't know if it necessarily has to.
That was the point I was going to make with that. I just thought of as you were saying that is that it's funny because, like, for me, my social group, you know, groupings are on Twitter. That is where my social, like, the people I hang out with,
right.
All that sort of stuff. It's like, oh my God, you see what so and so said on Twitter. But I see a lot of activity both on Facebook and on Google Plus, but I feel like Google Plus is more activity around content, where Facebook is more activity around people's damn baby pictures.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's come over to the dark side, Ron.
It definitely seems very, I mean, everyone's either getting married or they're having kids whatever on Facebook, where over on Google Plus, people are talking about content and it's more reactions to content. So I don't know. That's just me, but. Yeah.
And you know, besides social, you know, comparing it to like Twitter and Facebook, we really shouldn't do that because Google Plus is I keep saying the social glue that holds all of Google's products together. You know, for Android app reviews, Blogger, you know, YouTube comments, and for Google local places reviews, you know, map reviews. Like, it's something that can tie all those products together, Hangouts, I mean, everything. And Google just really didn't have that before. So people saying that it's going to go away, I think that's insane, because, I mean, it's the service that is unifying all of their products. So I think it's here to stay, and it's only going to get better as time goes on.
Well, and the article that called it The Walking Dead, I think, was it in TechCrunch?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's been criticized heavily.
Yeah. And in that article, where I read it, and it talks about Google's statement, or, you know, the news of Vic Kondrotcha leaving, is that Google Plus is a platform, and they're going to treat, they put too much into it. They're not going to abandon it. It's not going to be like Wave, where they put it out there and people didn't really click, and then you know, kind of abandon it. Like, people are using it. It's an easy joke to make because it's the last one to market. But
well, and aside from that, it's also very easy. I feel like I see a lot of people criticizing Google Plus that actually aren't very active on it.
Yeah.
And the perspective that you have when you're active and you have an active community that participates in everything versus when you've opened it up every once in a while, tried to get into it but didn't commit to it, and, you know, didn't give it enough time to really mature for your relationship with the people, you know, that might kind of follow you on Google Plus and vice versa. It's a different perspective entirely. So anytime I see someone write a criticism against Google Plus, and then, you know, realize that, oh, man, well, they have 78 followers. They've never posted a single thing. Last time they checked anything was blah, blah, blah. You know, finding that kind of stuff, I was like, okay, well, maybe this isn't an informed perspective from a personal level, and it probably needs to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know. I think it's really easy to root for Twitter because they're kind of a little underdoggy, and they're kind of hip and celebrities and all that sort of stuff. And it's really easy to just, you know, kind of bash on Google because they're so big and it's Google and that sort of thing. And I think a lot of people bring that baggage to the table. So, so I don't think
Twitter's not an underdog compared to Google. They are, right, but not in general. But yeah, I think you're right.
All right. Well, I guess we did talk about it.
There we go. We didn't even run the news bumper. Way to go. No. Way to go, Brian. Thank you.
Oh, hey, there we go. Okay, cool. Mentally placed that news bumper before the conversation. No, but Derek, I'm happy that you brought it up because I almost completely just didn't even acknowledge it at all, which is probably worth acknowledging. So good stuff there. We have a lot of other things to talk about, though. This week, we'll be discussing, a continued discussion on the Android Silver program, a.k.a. the end of Nexus, potentially. Okay, Google Everywhere. That sounds very cool. OnePlus One, which is a phone that really had a lot of people talking this past week. Some pretty controversial stuff there, in fact. And so much more. You've already run the news bumper, so let's get right into it, Ron. Whoa. Okay, breaking news. Do you know of this?
That's the generic breaking news.
Oh.
Yeah. I feel like if it was Android-specific breaking news, we'd have a little more of a sugary flavor to it, Brian.
I have no idea what you're talking about. There's no such thing that exists on this podcast.
Anyway. I'll talk to you later. We'll talk about it. We'll see eye to eye.
Well, I'm going to break off a piece of the news and tell you all about it right now. So as you mentioned, Android Silver, the program that we were talking about that was a rumor, has now been corroborated by four different sources. Those sources include former Wall Street Journal journalists,
the staff of the information.
Yeah, exactly.
Been told by their own sources.
But anyway, so these sources make it sound more and more legitimate that Android Silver is likely to replace the Nexus brand of phones, and it's going to replace it with the following high-end devices. Okay, little to no OEM or carrier customization on devices. Yeah, that's pretty big. Devices could be made specifically for Silver or be versions of existing devices tailored for the program. Timely update guarantee, which has been a hot button of recent days. And Google will market promotion of the handsets, so the marketing push of Google. What it didn't corroborate or didn't confirm that we rumored that we talked about earlier is no mention of a low-cost Nexus device that was being thrown about, and no mention of a developer-friendly stuff like an unlocked bootloader. So that's what we got on Android Silver. What do we make of it? Do we You got to put your money down on it, Jason. Is this the real
money
thing?
Money down, money down.
Money down, your silver. Put your silver.
I don't know. I mean, basically what this is saying is bye-bye Nexus program. Hello, a new kind of replacement program that almost seems to kind of be a combination of the Nexus program as well as the Google, the Play Edition devices into a Google-sanctioned, you know, premium. They have a focus on premium, high-end devices. So, you know, that, you know, right now Nexus as a program basically delivers pretty decent hardware at a low cost.
Yep.
Don't know if that low cost is going to be hit. I hope that doesn't go away. I don't know. I'm not really quite. I believe that this probably is somewhere in the cards. I don't think that it's going to happen soon. I don't think that it's going to happen right away. It's probably a year down the line. This is probably early talks, and it might even change a lot before then. But sounds plausible. Google really wants to tighten ship a little bit here, yeah. And they really are going full board on making Android more of a consumer kind of consumer thing that they recognize. You know, the fact that it's running Android, and that's a huge selling point. And the Google experience has been kind of a tinkerer's and people like us, people on Google Plus maybe that talk about this kind of stuff, right? Those are the people that really care about Google's version of Android. And I think what Google wants to do here is they want to say, these are premium phones that run the Google experience, and that's actually a huge selling point for everyone, not just fans of the platform.
Well, I think that's the nail on the head there. It's the Google experience. It's Google's version of Android. It doesn't have, you know, carrier bloatware. It doesn't have OEM skins and OEM apps. It's just pure Android in Google's vision. And it's almost something that, you know, anybody that's a Nexus fan, anybody that's, you know, stock Android fan should actually be very happy about this, because this is something that we've wanted since, you know, the G1. You know, we've wanted phones to be out there and more popular and everybody to have stock Android. You know, I mean, yeah, like you said, you know, outside the Android geeky techie community, most people probably don't really care. But that doesn't mean that it's not something that they might want. You know, they might want something that's clean and just works. You know, all these bloatware apps that they're never going to use. I mean, I really think that Nexus fans should really embrace this, because this is going to get, you know, stock Android out there to the masses. And, you know, it's going to maybe have, you know, Samsung eventually, you know, tone down their UI or something like that. Or, you know, LG might do that, you know, to kind of play ball in the future if this is a successful project from Google. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great news. And the Nexus fans that are kind of, you know, afraid, you know, about, you know, locked bootloaders and pricing and factory images, we don't know that yet. You know, I'd say let's not sharpen our pitchforks just yet. Let's, you know, wait and see what Google has in store for us.
But this is the internet. Every reason to sharpen our pitchforks, right?
We're not, you know, once we're done with one thing, we're going to move on to something else.
Exactly.
Let's not move on to this yet.
No, fair enough. Fair enough, Derek. Good points. What do you think, Gina?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely Google getting the Google experience out to consumers versus just super users like us who go to the Play Store and buy phones, right? Google's has to do this, right? Samsung's got their Galaxy line. Amazon's got their Fire OS. I mean, people are starting to create their experience, you know, even things like Facebook Home, which I know kind of flopped, but there's companies are creating their Android experiences. Google's in all of our opinions here, tell me correct me if I'm wrong, is the superior experience, the pure Google experience. But you can't get that really unless you go to the Play Store and buy a Nexus. And no one is doing that except us, except developers and power users and super users and people who really care about this stuff. And it sounds like Android Silver is going to be, you walk into a store, regular person, and you get help and you get the premium Android experience. You can ask for it and you can get it, and it comes from Google. And that's a good thing. Google's always going to have a developer handset, a reference device with the unlock bootloader and all those goodies. They're always going to have that, right? Because they always want developers to have that, especially when new versions of Android come out. So I'm not worried about that. I think this is just extending it to consumers.
What it actually reminds me of, and not to make an analogy to my day job, but quite often in the world of comic books, when a comic book title sales lag over the years, they'll cancel it and then bring it back with a new number one issue. Both DC and Marvel have done this ad nauseum for the past couple of years, because it's a new thing to talk about, and it gets it in the mix. It's not really changed that much, but it just has a number one on the cover. And so this is, I see this as a similar thing. Yeah, they're adding some aspects to it that are different than the Nexus program, but really, if let's say they didn't, Android Silver would never enter the lexicon, and this was just the next iteration of Nexus, it would be believable, it'd be plausible. Sure. But by calling it Android Silver and then actually working with the, putting more of a marketing effort behind it and getting it in stores, you know, it's kind of giving them a new product to talk about, but it's really the same product.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So not that it's bad. I think it's great. I think more people should get the Nexus 5. But I think Gina's right, is that no one's going to the Play Store. If they probably look at the sales, they're probably lagging. They're probably, it's not the new hotness, and they need to create something around the new hotness.
Sure.
A name that's been out there for how many years now? When did the Nexus 1 come out? 08, 09? I mean, it's been...
Thereabouts.
Yeah. So
Nexus
it's
1
been,
was 2010.
Yeah. Yeah. So, geez, it's been a long time. Android still feels new to me. That's the thing.
It's been a long time, and then it hasn't. It's only been 4 years since the first Nexus device.
I know. It just feels like, feels like it.
Yeah.
So.
There you go. So who knows when we're going to hear more about this, but, more and more sources are coming through.
What do you think?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. I don't know if this is a longer-term play. Like, I.O. almost seems like...
With the number of rumors. Well, of course, because this is when the rumors start coming out. This is when these things start leaking. I bet you there are presentations and decks that have Android Silver on it.
We're going to have to come up with like a betting game.
Oh, I'll count me in. How much?
Yeah, totally. We'll do fantasy IO announcement.
It takes devices, a year and a half, in planning before they come to fruition. So I'm betting we're going to not see anything for another year or more, sometime in 2015.
All right, so we got one for no. You're a no, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking not IO. Right, yeah.
Gina, where are you at?
It's either holiday season or early next year, I'd say.
I'm gonna double down on IO, man.
There we go.
I'm gonna do it. I'll take that bet.
All right, chat room.
Yeah.
Track this one for us.
Once again, we'll
see.
I got my Bitcoin wallet. I'm all ready to go. I'll spin that wheel.
You have your Dogecoin.
I got
all,
my Dogecoin.
All ready. All right. Well, how about some more rumors? Because why not? That's all we got. Do you want Google Now voice actions everywhere? Well, that appears to be coming soon to Android. It's called dubbed OK Google Everywhere, thanks to some rumory goodness published by Android Police, who, by the way, were the first ones to bring us this Android Silver rumor stuff, weeks ago that we talked about on the show. It was just now corroborated, of course, by the information, but there you go. So evidence points strongly to Google integrating voice actions and controls just about everywhere throughout the Android experience, specialized actions for apps, which make it possible to launch into actions specific to an app's operation from within the app itself. Recommendations for a user's actions within the app could also appear. This would kind of be the same as any other Google Now voice action that you might do now, except it's tailored to an app. So it really opens the door for some incredible opportunities there. Also, possibly a change to navigation buttons. If you see these screens here, they're replacing the home button. Oh, the other screen. There we go. Home button with a Google button. So the home goes away.
Oh, boy.
Google ends up there.
Wow, look at the meta text of that, by the way.
Interesting.
The home goes away and it's replaced with Google.
Yes.
Your home replaced by Google. Let's see here. That's a persistent Google button. It's for conducting these actions that we're talking about, voice actions across all the apps, a redesigned, of course, back and multitasking buttons. One thing to consider here, and Android Police points this out and asks us to not sharpen our pitchforks about this, there's a lack of a home button, which basically makes you wonder, okay, well, how do you get home? Right. Does the Google button take you home? No, if the Google button, there we go. Thank you for the pitchforks, Brian. You're earning your keep today. Keep it up. So they say that it's possible that the multitasking screen might be how you do that.
Ooh.
Which sounds messy, but again, no sharpening pitchforks because we actually don't know, but it's
fair.
Something to consider there. I don't know. What do you think?
It's
interesting.
If you're going to have to take two clicks or two taps of the screen to get to the home screen, you have to tap the recents button and then find the recent tab and then flick it or swipe it or something like that to get to home.
But unacceptable.
Maybe you hold in on the Google logo, for a second and it takes you home. You know what I mean? Like we don't know yet. There's so much speculation out there
Absolutely.
How it actually works.
Yep. Nope, that's very true. Having said that, yeah, two clicks, like you said, Gina, that would be unacceptable. Yes. And actually holding down might actually be unacceptable depending on how important the home screen is to the full user experience. Right now, it's the universe of the user experience. Having to know as a first-time user that you have to hold down in order to get there would be a pretty bad choice.
Right.
That illustrates even more how much Android can kind of be a little complicated in that regard, right? Like, oh, you're a tinkerer, you're a tech-minded individual, so you know to look for these things, but not everybody that uses Android is that. Yep.
So I'm wondering if Google looked at metrics and found out that we don't use the home screen, you know, that often. Oh, you know, man. We use it to just launch an app or something, or we're not actually using widgets that often. You know, they use something in their reporting tools to see that, you know, users aren't spending that much time really on the home screen. So why not move beyond that? I mean, they had to have some reason to do that. You know, like you said, do you really think they would come out with a reason to confuse brand new users? You know, no. So I generally think that they know what they're doing when it comes to design. I'm also a big Google fanboy, though, so I could be wrong there. I could be
the target audience.
Anyways, I would think they would have had some type of metric somewhere to back that decision up.
Fair enough. What were you going to say, Jim?
That particular bit of UI is definitely part of the Google launcher, like the Google experience launcher, right? So, I mean, that's definitely something that you could switch out by using another launcher, right?
Yeah.
But the implications Google doesn't of being want you able to build... Well, of course they don't. Yeah. Of course they don't, which is why they want to make the best experience.
Yeah.
And they are making the best experience. So, but the implications of them enabling developers to build voice actions into their apps, which is what Android Wear, the wearable SDK, lets you do, is like this is about the Google experience, right? Like, this is about motivating developers to include Google specific code that only works if you get the app through the Play Store, right? So this is Google saying you should build for us because the Play Store is the biggest distribution channel. If you get the app through the Amazon store, like, it's not going to work. Or the Samsung store, you know, that stuff isn't going to work. Like, this is Google kind of, again, you know, what Koch was saying in his interview last week, like, using their leverage to make the Google experience the best Android experience. It all kind of dovetails back to the Android Silver thing.
Mm-hmm. And it also, I mean, and to, you know, build on what Derek said, we shouldn't be afraid of a new paradigm. You know, just because we've gotten used to this idea of a home button for years and all that sort of stuff, maybe it is the multitask button, but maybe it's not multitask. Maybe it's just tasks. And that pulls up both your running applications and your list of applications. Or maybe there's some other navigation we don't even know about yet. You know, like, so, you know, I'm not afraid to try something new. The question is whether or not people who don't like it can switch back. You know, like, it's kind of how do you help people through? You know, this kind of reminds me of the Microsoft getting rid of the start button. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
True. It's a good point.
It took them 2 years, but hey, it's coming back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
2 years in Android land. That's like half of its existence right now. A little bit less than that, I suppose. But there you go. All right. What about HTC, Gina?
Last bit of news. Well, HTC has long been seen as a manufacturer that designs beautiful handsets. Witness my M8. What happens then when HTC's head of design, Scott Croyle, the person responsible for the design of the HTC One's line, announces he is leaving the company? HTC describes Croyle's move as a long-term transition. They'll be keeping him involved with product development for at least a few more months. But Croyle isn't the only one leaving HTC. HTC's senior director, Ford Davison, and others were also transitioning out of the company over the coming months. I'm afraid and sad for HTC. Like, I love the one. I love the M8. They are beautifully designed. I don't know if Croyle's going to be able to transition, you know, his work and his duties to his number two, who's coming up and taking over his position. But it makes me worried for HTC amidst everything that's going on. To have an executive exodus is a little worrisome.
Yeah. On one hand, it's sad. It's potentially sad because HTC. I love their approach on design. On the other hand, HTC still isn't doing that great, and he's been the guy with design. So maybe again, it comes back to, well, the enthusiasts, or maybe there's a certain subsection of people that do like that design, but most people actually don't care because other companies are doing great and they don't have that type of design. They're doing something completely different.
Right.
So who knows where the blame
lies. People are replaceable.
Yeah.
There's another good designer guy.
Matthias Duarte out there that could swoop
HTC
in and help
HTC.
HTC
needs to find their Johnny Ive and they'll be fine.
Right, there you go.
I don't think this is the end of HTC by any regard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just turnover. That's what happens. You know?
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Life in the big city.
Everyone is replaceable. That's what I've learned. I don't know, Derek.
And now I'm scared.
Yeah, I know. Listen, Jason. As I looked at Jason, I know. Everyone's replaceable.
And then he gave me a glare. Thanks.
Derek, what do you think? Is this the end of HEC?
It's kind of scary because, as you know, you guys mentioned that HTC hasn't been that popular of a Android OEM. And even though their designs have been great, in my opinion, you know, the HTC One and the M8, you know, they're both beautifully designed phones, but they're not extremely successful phones. So now you take away the guy that's doing a whole lot of good, and it seems like it's going to hurt their chances even more. But, you know, as you know, you said, everybody's replaceable, you know, to an extent. So hopefully another designer can come along and continue to design beautiful devices for HTC.
Yeah, they have kind of a history with that specific type of design. So a part of their community of people that are really engaged with their devices expect that level of design too. But hey, if something's not working, maybe you have to change it up too. So who knows what's going to happen.
Who knows? All right. Well, we got an email. Before we get into our email, I just want to reflect that Jason is irreplaceable. So,
shucks. Thank you. I was worried there, Ron.
Oh, no.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
Brian, on the other hand, is hanging on by a thread.
So. I'm really trying.
He's trying hard.
All right, cool. So we did get an email, and I got to applaud Lori from North Carolina for I got to give you a slow clap for what might be my favorite email we've ever gotten. Wow. And also very topical because I had this exact same thought last night as I was cleaning up my Nexus 7 I was uninstalling apps. Lori writes in and says, I'm a bit behind in the episodes, but I have a question that I hope that hasn't been asked yet. And Lori, it hasn't, so you win. What apps do you still use that were in the arena? I know you all download apps, but delete after a week or two. What are the ones that you found that are still around for the long term? So, Gina, Jason, what arena apps do you continue to use after you've demoed them?
This is a hard question to answer.
It is.
It's a bitter pill to swallow because we've covered so many apps in the arena.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure people understand that I don't have 159 of my arena apps that I install on every single phone that I get.
Episode 159.
Yes, we're on episode
159. 159 apps each. Well, no, let's say we've been out every now and then. Let's give or take 150. Or so.
Well, I don't even have 150 apps that I install on a phone. But just looking through here real quick, app sale. I'm going alphabetically. App sales, Astro File Manager. That's the file manager that I've always been with. Bacon Reader for Reddit. AnChat, which is an IRC client that I featured. Oh, man, I don't know. There's not a whole lot in here to be. LastPass. I can't remember if that was in the arena, but that goes on almost immediately. When I get a new device, Pocket. I know I featured that Plume, Pocket Cast, Gina's Push Bullet. That goes on all the time. That's kind of about it. Swift Key. There you go.
I think there should be a new segment where Jason just reads off the apps on his phone.
Well, I mean, I don't know how better to answer this question than to do that.
What about you, Gina?
So just to be clear, I definitely don't have everything that I featured installed on my phone. I often have apps that you guys have picked because they're great picks. Mm-hmm. And they got me, but a few, not an exhaustive list, but City Mapper, Fast Burst Camera, LastPass, Push Bullet, The Shape Shooter, which is kind of a fun game, Pushover, Pocket Cast, Time Hop, Trello, Twilight, Pocket Cast, and more aspirational than anything else, but Duolingo, which is a really great app, and I just don't take the time to use it as much, but I keep reinstalling it thinking like on every new phone I think I'm gonna do more of this because it's great.
If it's not there, you can't use it. It's like right. Winning the lottery, right. You can't win if you don't play.
Right I'm gonna speak Italian fluently and I will do it because of this app.
I need to see a list of my apps that were in the arena, but I'm willing to say that probably 95% of them I don't go back and use ever again
after the arena. You've given them the time and the spotlight.
I've put in a lot of wacky apps.
Yes,
like those
you have.
Weird, I can't tell you how long I spent the other night on my tablet removing keyboard apps. Like, I, you know, so, but that said, I mean, Pocket Cast, SwiftKey, those, I mean, there are ones that become like the standbys that I almost don't consider arena apps anymore.
Right.
But a lot of the ones that we've thrown out there, they're burners for me. It's like, oh, this is a cool app, check this out, and then walk away, you know? So
I don't think there's anything wrong with that either, because I've featured a lot in the arena that maybe aren't necessarily for me, but they're still cool or they're still well designed or whatever. Derek, for you, obviously, you've been in the arena one time. So I don't, I can't even remember what you had in the arena then. Do you remember? Maybe I'll look it up.
Yeah, it was an app that you can use to buy stuff. It was a credit card swipe. What app is that? I can't think of
it. Square?
I haven't installed.
Is it Square?
Square, there you go.
Yeah,
okay, all right.
That's a pretty good app. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, yeah, Square I have installed.
It a few times, but the few times I've used it over the past, I don't know, 6-8 months or so, I mean, I still have it, and I've used it. If I need to use it,
right,
I'll use it. But, yeah, there's so many apps out there. I go through apps all the time. You know, was it Jason or somebody? I think you mentioned Bacon Reader.
Yeah.
And when you said that, whoever said it, my eyes lit up. I was like, oh, I used to use that app, but oh, I've since moved on to something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's so still my Reddit app. Yeah. No, there really are. If you get a device and you're just starting to install apps, what are the first, like, what are at the top of the list that you install immediately on this device? Kind of a similar question, like the apps that have really have that lasting value for you.
I'm big into sharing news and staying up to date, you know, with news. So Press is pretty much one of my most popular apps. When I get a review device, like the Find 7A I have here, like one of the first things I did on it was install Press because I knew I had to stay up to date with, you know, news.
Mm-hmm.
Besides that, I don't know. I'd have to take a look here. Try to think off the top of my head.
I know. It's not easy to do. No worries. Okay. Well, there you go. I mean, we rattled off a decent amount of apps in a very short amount of time. There were no lower thirds for those, by the way. You're going to have to just listen back and figure it out on your own.
Yeah,
do you have access to the doc, Ron?
No. I'm looking at the wiki, and I'm all constantly amazed at the level of detail that the All About Android's app list wiki. I think it's great because it lists all the apps, but I never realized that, A, they had all the – whoever's going in and categorizing them and subcategorizing them.
Yeah.
But then when did they add the arena winning stats to the bottom?
That's been in there in a while. Oh, down at the very bottom.
Yeah, down at the very bottom. Now there's someone calculated each year of how many – who won and their streak. Like, your longest streak was 4 wins in a row, like, in 2012, right?
See, this is not a game. This is life.
Also, right, I'm a huge loser, according to this. It's like, in 2011, I came in last. In 2012, I came in last. In 2013, Aaron Newcomb beat me.
Aaron Newcomb?
Man, I got to get on my game.
Yeah, you do.
Man, I'm sorry.
For those that want to look at every single app we've ever featured on the show, you can go to wiki.twit.tv, search for the All About Android wiki, and you'll find a list in there, and
it's
really
amazing.
Impressive.
It's amazing.
I believe it's Theater Monkey who maintains that, so thank you, Theater Monkey.
I'm in awe.
Thank you, Theater Monkey.
And I'm sure there are other folks that have contributed to it as well.
It's an impressive site. I also like the first app that won the first arena was the Google Play Store app.
That's
a pretty important app to have.
That
right?
was yes, and that we did things a little differently in the arena.
I know.
Then the arena was pitting three apps of the same type against each other.
Yeah.
We did it for a while that way, and we started with, you know, stores. So it was the recently launched Amazon App Store. You know, and I think it was Slide Me was the other one. Yep. Anyways. Where's Slide Me Now?
That was fantastic. I'm sorry. That was great.
Hey, anyway, we've come a long way.
I had no idea that I won 2013, by the way. You're going to have to butter up the sides of my head to get out the door tonight.
I know.
2013,
I didn't realize
baby.
That either. That's awesome.
Unbelievable.
Thank you.
The thing is that, like, I deserve some sort of special arena award because I think I take the most risks.
You do.
Yeah.
So you take risks.
You definitely have the biggest risk taker.
You put yourself out there.
I put myself out there.
And then you don't ever use the app again.
Exactly. That's why it's so easy to walk away.
There you go.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, let's thank our sponsor for today's episode. This would be Lantronix and their XPrint server. Whether you're at home or the office, printing from your Android device, Chromebooks, or even your Kindle Fire can be a challenge. And if your printer isn't already cloud-enabled, you're out of luck. For the longest time, I've just kind of accepted that printing from my phone, from my tablet, it's so frustrating that I don't want to do it. It's unusable. And even, you know, my printer at home, it's a dumb printer. I bought it years ago. It's not a smart one by any means. It doesn't automatically connect to the cloud. So this is kind of perfect for me. This allows me to take advantage of Google Cloud Print. XPrint Server Google Cloud Print Edition is an easy setup, easy to use solution for Google Cloud Print enabled devices, allowing wireless and mobile printing from Chromebook computers, Android phones, and tablets, even the Kindle Fire. And it works with the printer you already own, whether it's wired or wireless, USB, or network. It's the first and only print server officially certified by Google for Cloud Print and Android printing. You can print to your existing printers. Like I said, you don't need to buy a new one. It's compatible with more than 4,000 top brand printers, and it's easy to use. It's kind of plug and play. Automatic discovery and setup of printers. You just open it, plug it in, and print. It has advanced configuration available through its web interface. And one XPrint server, and I have one right here to show it off. It's pretty small device here.
Box.
One XPrint server supports multiple printers and virtually unlimited Android devices. It allows your USB printers to be shared with all users over the network. It's great for home, great for your office. It even works in large multi-function printers. And Cloud Print Edition, this is $149.95. It supports up to 10 network printers and 8 USB printers simultaneously. Pretty crazy stuff. So visit xprintserver.com/twit for more information and to buy. And we've got a special offer if you use the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. Just use that code TWIT at checkout and you'll get free shipping on your order. So remember, visit xprintserver.com/twit and at checkout, enter the code TWIT. And we thank them for their support of All About Android. Pretty cool stuff.
I'll tell you why I like the XPrint server.
What?
It's because the X lights up.
Yeah.
I think all the really good peripherals need to light up in a dramatic way. No, I'm serious.
They all need to lend ambient light.
Exactly. Some sort of dramatic kind of presence kind of thing. I like that.
Yes.
So I'm pro.
Agreed.
I'm
That's pro. Another feature, Ron.
Yeah, there you go. It's a feature.
It's a big feature. All right. Let's get into hardware. A little late on that one, Brian.
Missed the cue there, Brian.
It's okay. We forgive you. We got to see the drop, and that's all that's important.
So close.
So close. Missed it by that much. Okay. So there was a device that got a lot of people talking over the past week. It's been an interesting conversation through and through, the OnePlus One. And Derek, you've done a lot of following of this on Google Plus and through Fandroid. Why don't you give us kind of the skinny on the OnePlus One? What is it and why is it so cool?
All right, so OnePlus let's backtrack a little bit. Late last fall, I think around December, a new company, new startup was announced called OnePlus, and it was made up of a bunch of ex-Oppo members, and they started promising high information about their phone. You know, they were going to do things that other manufacturers couldn't do, other software manufacturers, developers couldn't do. They were going to, you know, they made a bunch of high promises from the beginning. And their whole motto was to never settle. You know, you shouldn't have to settle on software, shouldn't have to settle on specs and yada, yada, yada. And over the past so many months, they've not really produced anything until recently, just a whole bunch of marketing fluff about their devices. So a lot of people were very skeptical, and also a lot of people, you know, were very excited about their device. So their marketing finally came to the announcement that they were going to allow you to purchase this phone for $1 if you smashed your current phone. And that promotion, you know, raised a whole bunch of, well, like we keep saying this episode, is on the internet, you know, people got their pitchforks and torches ready and said, oh, why should I smash my phone for this phone? Well, it's a $1 phone. It has high-end specs, and you're not going to have to settle. And you know, everything started coming together. So people got really excited for this phone, and then they started doing a little bit more digging, saying, okay, well, you know, these guys are promising a whole heck of a lot up front. They're a brand-new company. You know, can they deliver? And from the beginning, Oppo said that they were using, I'm sorry, not Oppo, that's funny. OnePlus said, that, well, we're getting to that.
Yeah, easy to get them confused. We'll get there. Yeah,
OnePlus said that they were going to be using Oppo to manufacture their phone. And they said, you know, this was similar to Apple using, you know, Foxconn's facility to manufacture the iPhone. And a lot of people really maybe forgot about that. And then time went on and now the Oppo Find 7 starts hitting the market. You know, people start getting review units and developers start looking at the code and everyone starts saying, hey, the OnePlus One specs line up with the Find 7A specs almost exactly. There's a couple differences. You know, the battery's different, SD card, the changeable case back, you know, RAM, so forth. But they're very, very similar devices. So questions started popping up everywhere. Rumors start popping up saying, you know, are these guys the same company? We know they came from this company, and people looked into it. And Giz China did some digging and found out that, according to the Chinese regulatory board, that a company by the name of Oppo Electronic is the primary shareholder of OnePlus. So, boom, more fuel to fire. And they asked OnePlus to answer, you know, to respond. And OnePlus came back and said that, well, we've said all along that, you know, we are a separate run company. And actually, doing a little bit more digging to break it down even more, they are a separate run company, but there's a whole slew of companies that are really involved in this. So BBK Electronics owns a company called Oppo Electronics. Oppo Electronics is the investment company that owns Oppo Mobile, and they also own OnePlus. So Oppo Electronics is the investment company that now has two phones competing against one another, and they're both manufactured in the same factory, and they're all owned by BBK Electronics. So everybody found all this information out and sharpened their pitchforks and yelled all about Oppo up and down all over the place, saying that, you know, they lied from the beginning, that, right, you know, we thought they were the underdog coming out of nowhere,
publicity
stunts,
you know, yeah.
We thought they were a brand new company, and it turns out that they're just a subsidiary of a large company. So their appeal for some people dwindled. You know, some people that are fans, you know, didn't matter because you know how fanboys are. But, people that were buying into the marketing kind of were upset that, you know, they're not really having these fresh ideas because they're part of a big company. Personally, you can be part of a big company and still have fresh ideas. You know, just because they've got money from a parent company doesn't mean that, you know, they're not going to have fresh ideas. You can clearly look at the phone and see the cost of a phone at $299 because, you know, in the end, a $299 flagship phone with the best specs out there, I don't really care who makes it, it is still a $299 phone with the best specs out there.
Right,
and that's
right.
My opinion. A lot of people disagree, though. A lot of people feel that they were swindled, but
how are they swindled?
They were led to believe that, yeah, that this was the underdog. When
yeah, no, they got played.
Information hidden. Yeah. I mean, you could go to their domain name and see who owns the domain,
sure,
and it says Oppo Electronics owns it. So they didn't hide the information, but they didn't sing it from the heavens. And apparently because they didn't sing it from the heavens, people were upset.
Right. People like to get upset.
Still seems wacky. Yeah, people like those pitchforks. They love those pitchforks, man. Mm-hmm. But
it does seem weird that people are upset about who owns the phone. Like, has the thing that they shipped? Have they shipped a phone, or announced the specs?
Coming to Q2. Aren't we in Q2?
I really think it's just because they thought they were this new, brand new startup underdog, no names coming out of nowhere, and we're going to deliver this something that was never done before.
Right.
And they are, but they're bankrolled by a bigger company. And I really don't understand the big problem with that, but I don't know. A lot of people are upset by it.
A good inexpensive, you know, higher-end phone is a good inexpensive higher-end phone, like you said,
Derek. Exactly. I mean, who the hell cares who was giving them the money to make it? It's a great phone with high-end specs, and it costs barely anything. It costs half the price of phones with, you know, those same specs. So
yeah.
I can't wait to try it. I'm gonna buy it. I think it's going to be great. I don't care how they got their money.
Yeah. I mean, it, from a cost perspective, it competes with the off contract price of the Nexus 5. And from a performance standpoint, you know, 2.5 gigahertz Snapdragon 801 processor, 3 gigs of RAM, 5.5 inch screen, 1080p LCD,
13 megapixel Sony X4 camera, 3100 milliamp hour battery, non-removable. So some people were upset with that, but I think 3100 is pretty darn reasonable.
Yeah.
So and is running CyanogenMod, of course, is running a version of CyanogenMod. So interesting stuff. I think the thing that kind of I wouldn't say upset, but I was just kind of thought was a little not a smart move from a marketing standpoint is the Smash Your Phone campaign.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just, just kind of
like wasteful.
Wasteful. Yeah, exactly.
And negative,
on top of that, I saw a lot of people on Google Plus saying, heck yeah, I'll smash my phone for a $1 phone or for $1, you know, one of these. And I'm like, you're not getting it necessarily. You're smashing your phone to enter a lottery. And that's not a good deal.
I was going to say, what is the gap between my smashing my phone and me getting the new phone?
Oh,
what
no,
do I do
they
in
have
between?
100 devices to give out versus all the people that do
2 days. So I don't know about you, but I can't go 2 days without a phone.
Yeah.
So what am I supposed to do, smash my phone and hope that I don't need a phone over 2 days, you know, for emergency purposes or whatever? I can't do that.
Well,
so
it's almost like it's only four people that have two devices
sure,
already.
Go ahead and do that. But people with responsibilities can't go 2 days with not being able to contact people.
Well, they seem wacky. I mean, looking at the video we're watching, and Brian, actually, I just go to the link I put in the chat room. Looking at their careers page, at their hiring page, right? So they've got, you know, they're based in China. And so they've got, you know, looking for PHP programmers, SEO experts, you know, business development. And then the last one, your dream job.
Department changed the world.
Now click on that, and now you don't typically see this at big company. Like this is kind of wacky. If you look at it, they're just saying, you know, if you can't find an open position that suits you, but you're confident you can help us, read on. Like they want you to contact them and tell them what you can do because they want to do different. Like they see whoever's doing this seems already out there.
Yeah,
and I think
they certainly want to be perceived as being out there.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I don't see it as a swindle. I just see it as more of a, you know, not normal, kind of, you know.
I think that's part of their appeal, though, and that's why people were upset, because it's not normal, but oh, wait, they're affiliated with a normal company, so they really are normal, you know. I don't know.
Well, there you go. The OnePlus One, I think, you know, from a device standpoint, it's a pretty great-looking device. I just don't like the... I don't think it's necessary for anyone to destroy their devices. And maybe that sounds too like tree huggerish or whatever, but I think we're already filling landfills with tons and tons of plastic stuff that's never going to go anywhere. Somebody else can use this. There are plenty of organizations that you can give this device to. Don't destroy your device for a dollar.
Cell phones
device.
For
it's
soldiers.
Irresponsible.
You know, there's all sorts of good places. You can even sell it on Swappa.
Yep.
And make money. You know, you could sell your phone for $400 or $500 on there. And then turn around and buy the OnePlus One when it becomes available, and then still have a profit. So I don't know. I mean, like you said, Jason, I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, there we go. So, Gina, what else? What does Samsung have coming out here? They had an announcement.
The Kazoom.
The Kazoom. Kazoom.
That's a great name.
Like the
Samsung
Kazoo.
Has announced the Galaxy K Zoom, which likely won't see a U.S. release, but it's notable for what it brings, and that's a retractable 10 times zoom lens. Yes, wow. It's basically a camera that also you can make phone calls on. It's also got 20.7 megapixel sensor, 4.8 inch, 720p Super AMOLED display, hexa-core design with two 1.7 gigahertz cores, four 1.3 gigahertz cores, and it's running Android 4.4. So this is a really nice camera that also makes phone calls. And the camera features a suite of tailored features and apps, one of which is called the Selfie Alarm, okay? So this is the ultimate selfie-taking camera phone. You set a spot on the screen to use a selfie alarm where you want your face to appear. And when you turn your camera around, take the selfie, the K will beep when you are framed as you wanted, and it'll take three pictures so you can pick your favorite.
God.
This thing is kind of amazing looking. Like, the aspiring photographer in me kind of wants this thing, but it's really thick. It's really heavy. It really looks like a giant camera.
Yeah.
The Kazoom.
Kazoom. You think of it as a camera first, phone second. And then it's kind of like, okay, point and shoots are a little bit thicker than phones and a little bit heavier maybe. And it has the retractable zoom. And in that case, hey, sign me up. That sounds great. I don't know. Maybe it's silly. I think the selfie alarm is actually pretty brilliant.
That's what it's come to.
If Samsung doesn't add this to all of their future phones, then they're missing a big opportunity here because selfies apparently are like the biggest thing right now. So.
Look at that big old lens. My goodness.
It's enormous. I mean, it looks like a camera. It's a camera with a phone. That's what it is.
It's me while I make a phone call on my camera.
That's crazy.
I think I'd have to use it. It looks so thick. I don't know if I'd like to walk around with that in my pocket.
Consider yourself like 4 years ago carrying your cell phone.
I say that now, but for the past couple of weeks, I've been carrying around this 5.5-inch monster.
There you go, right.
For the photo enthusiasts, I could see that as a major selling point. Like the people who are really like the Instagram photographers and all that sort of stuff, I could see that as being a big deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this story, I saw this came across the wire today, and I thought it was interesting as we're talking a lot about gesture control and different ways of interfacing with devices. A new product called the Nod Gesture Control Ring is out and available today for $149. And if you run the video, Brian, you can see it. Basically, it's a ring that is designed for you to wear all the time, just as another ring. So Jason's would be perfect to replace your thumb ring.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And basically it's Bluetooth powered and it connects to your device and gives you control over the device. So there you saw somebody using Netflix on Android on a TV, basically, you know, interacting with the application similar to when you put developer mode on, you see where the tap is or whatnot. Really kind of neat. I mean, this kind of aspect of you wearing this ring and then it at any given point you can use it to control your device. And for the demo, they're showing it in front of a big TV so you can see it being used, but it's compatible with any device that uses Bluetooth. So you could use it on your phone, you could use it on your tablet, you could use it on a computer. Kind of interesting. I mean, it's not Android specific, but it's clearly Android compatible.
Yeah.
That thing is wacky.
Isn't it?
It's right up your alley, Rom.
Right. I know. I saw it. I'm like, this is kind of cool.
We did an arena for hardware.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea. Maybe that's what we need. An arena for hardware.
Minority Report.
It's getting very Minority Reporty, isn't it? Yeah, it just seems really interesting. Yeah.
So you'll have this on one finger, you'll have the NFC ring on another finger.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And you'll just have a thumb ring just because.
just for style.
Just because you're that guy that wears one.
But anyway, it's available now for $149. So if you saw that and connected with it like I did,
that's pretty cool.
It might be up your alley. Yeah, it's
pretty cool.
Neat.
Although
yeah.
even watching the demo, it looks like it's kind of hard to use. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he's like, and you see the cursor jumping a lot.
But honestly, quickly in the demo, they showed somebody giving a presentation, and you know, if you're somebody who often gives a lot of presentations and holding the mouse or holding those kind of slide positioners, just being able to kind of give a little flick of your thumb to your finger to change the slide is that's a clear use of it. I wonder how durable it is if it's designed for everyday wear, you know,
right?
Yeah. So, but yeah, pretty neat. I mean, look at that little buttons and everything. I mean, yeah, it's pretty cool. So, there you go.
Well, smart rings, wearable rings, or wearable technology
wearable
rings,
technology, man. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how the whole rings thing shakes out.
If you had your Google smartwatch and it's Bluetooth powered, and could you see the two talking and working together? Possibly.
Maybe. Yeah, I can see that.
Who knows?
Let's see here. Just real quick, I did a review of the Sony Xperia Z2 tablet. I have it here on today's Before You Buy. So if you want to see the full review, go check it out. It's twit.tv/BYB. It should be posted later today, so probably for most of the people that get this in download. But I really liked the tablet. Hold this for a second. You'll see just kind of how thin and light. I mean, it's like holding a small stack of paper.
It's almost too light.
Yeah, I know. You gotta worry a little bit about its durability, maybe. But even, you know, it doesn't have a whole lot of flex when you try and twist it and everything. It does have the port covers, but that's only because it is IP58. So that's dust and water resistant. You can see right there the port covers are what solidified. I did a dunk test on Before You Buy, and as you can see, it survived. So, but it's a great. A premium tablet. It starts at $500 for 16 gigs, $600 for 32 gigs. And I'd say my only big complaint was with the camera, which it just took some pretty awful photos for the most part. But again, you know, do you guys hold tablets accountable for bad pictures? Because, I mean, I don't ever use my tablet for pictures, so it's kind of like, okay, if everything else is good and the camera sucks, I'll still recommend it. So, see, black background blurring, which everybody's doing nowadays, didn't quite work so well on that one. The next one worked really well, so... But I mean, just in general, like a lot of fuzzy pictures.
Yeah, front facing was okay. Not good pictures.
You know, aside from Skype, I don't see any reason to have a camera on the tablet. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I see it as a video conferencing tool.
Some people want to have it because it's there and they expect it to be there. I just don't think you're going to take the best pictures ever with a tablet.
They want to go to Disney World and do this.
Yes, right. Yeah. Everywhere I go, I have this in my. It doesn't. Pass the back pocket test.
No, it doesn't pass the back pocket test. I haven't done that in a while. Yeah. How do you not touch here?
That's what everybody asks me. I'm sure I could just get rid of that, right? No?
No, you can't.
Okay, well, let's touch there and see what we have. Isn't that... Nope. If that's attached to your screen permanently,
right? Now that's got to be because it's a demo unit, right? It's got to be. It's probably another app.
You were able to
widget.
Yeah, you were able. Okay, and that is one of my complaints is that the touchscreen responsiveness.
Yeah,
like I was trying to do it and it wasn't doing it.
Yeah, I tried it a couple times. It didn't.
But anyways, so there you go. It's a great tablet. I gave it a buy. For the upper end Android tablets right now, it's definitely among the best that I've played with. So. There you go, Sony Xperia Z2 tablet. All right, Gina, Glass. What's going on with Glass?
Yeah, I got a couple of Glass updates. Field Trip is now voice integrated into Google Glass. So you're wearing Glass, you can say the command explore nearby, and Field Trip will show you interesting facts about the world that surrounds you as you walk and look at things. Field Trip, of course, is developed by Niantic Labs, which is actually owned by Google, but they operate independently, and that's available today. And Google announced a few upcoming changes to Glass. Photo and video backup will now be available with any internet connection, not just powered Wi-Fi. And also smarter phone answering that will know if Glass is on your face when a call comes through and route the call accordingly, which is actually a really nice update that Glass needs badly, because the few times I do take out Glass, someone calls and I'm like, what is ringing? Where are my glasses? I need to answer that phone call, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
some nice Google Glass updates there. And Field Trip, obviously is an obvious use case for Glass. And it's nice to see that it was really integrated into the main menu there, voice commands.
So Derek, you're donning a pair of Google Glass right now. Have you used this Field Trip? There we go. mouth open, mouth agape as you control.
Field Trip. I honestly haven't checked to see if the update, if I can just say, okay, Glass, explore around me yet. I haven't checked that yet, but the other updates I'm actually excited for. You don't know how many times I've had Glass like laying on my desk or nightstand charging, and then somebody calls me. Because I don't wear Glass around the house. I'm only doing it here because everywhere I go, people see me with Glass on. Anyways, so it's charging and the phone rings. So I pick it up. Hello? 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 And it's like, then I got to pick it. I got to look at the phone. I got to change it from Glass to the earpiece. And that happens. That probably happens like two or three times a week. Oh, it's so annoying. But so it's nice to see that finally coming. And a lot of people are excited for the video and photo upload. So you don't have to go home, and plug into power or find Wi-Fi to upload your photos. If you want to upload them and edit them on the go, you can.
Right. At the expense of your battery, of course, because then it's using mobile to do it.
Yeah.
But hey, if you need to do it, you can now.
Exactly.
And I actually got an argument today with somebody on Google Plus about that, but they want the ability to do that because they, want more control over their photos. So it's apparently a good thing for some people.
Control is at the heart of Android. Control and customization.
Yes, yep.
And when you don't have that option, then it's...
It gets frustrating.
It doesn't feel like home.
Yeah, home. Yeah. Or Google.
it doesn't feel like Google logo.
Man, I can't wait till we wrap the show and I can go back to Google. Man, Google's where the heart is.
Google's where the heart is.
I see what you did there.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Nice.
Let's do some apps.
Let's do it.
Man, I could go for hours with Google Home jokes, by the way. They just flooded my brain. So I love it when science and research proves the wide thrashing opinions we have of things. And in this particular case, a study of Samsung and Samsung users using the S3 and S4 and their use of apps proves the theory of what we've been talking about, that Samsung's bloatware nobody really wants. A new study from Strategic Analytics shows that the U.S. users of the S3 and S4 that were tracked during the last month reported on average of around 7 minutes of total usage of an array of Samsung apps versus an average of 149 minutes on just Play, the Play Store, YouTube, and Search. And that's nothing when you compare it to Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. I think this stat really sums it up really well. S3 and S4 smartphone users logged an average of 6 seconds per month using chat on versus 11 hours per month on Facebook and 2 hours per month on Instagram.
Yeah.
Facebook is a force. Look at that.
Look at it. You compare anything to Facebook and it's going to be dwarfed pretty much. Yeah. So keep that in mind.
Yeah. No, I was going to make the point that this is not apples to apples. This is apples to oranges. And that Facebook and Instagram and Twitter are completely different, you know, kind of things. But if you look at it, the Samsung Apps app got 1.2 versus the Google Play Store 52.4. You know, like they're finding the connections where we can. Chat on is, you know, you're doing similar things in Facebook. You're potentially talking to people as you are with chatting or whatever. You know, it just shows that not these apps aren't getting a lot of use. So,
yeah, and it kind of makes you wonder, you know, Samsung's greater strategy we keep hearing is, you know, with Tizen and then possibly kind of branching out beyond Android and kind of sitting on all of their services to replace the Android services and apps and everything like that. This kind of doesn't point in the direction of that being a very smart move now. Who knows if they can kind of turn that into something different going forward, but yeah.
Yeah, and another
kind of what I figured.
Another interesting point from the study was that on average, Galaxy S4 users have 21 more apps than the industry average. So S4 users
come with tons of bloatware. There's no surprise there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, shocking.
Yeah, right. And that you can't remove, by the way.
I love that the guy, Barry Gilbert, the vice president of strategy analytics, his quote was, "Samsung should develop a differentiated set of apps that will resonate with his user base." Captain Obvious.
piece of cake.
Maybe they should make good apps. Pay me.
They might be able to throw more phones at the market to find their niche, but they can't keep throwing more apps at the market. It's not going to work.
Agreed.
I would really like to see this chart though with some more reasonable comparisons. Yeah. Like, I'd like to see chat on versus hangouts. I'd like to see Google Play versus multiplayer, you know, play games, S Voice versus Google Keep. I mean, I actually think that those numbers would be, I think that the chart would probably look similar, but not as extreme as this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this really spells it. This pushes it to the absolute max. That's why, like, comparing anything to Facebook, even outside of the S3 and S4 users and Samsung apps and everything, I mean, it's going to dwarf. So there you go. But this is limited to S3 and S4 users, so it is, you know, still keeping within the Samsung user pool. And so it probably says something. I just don't know if it's as extreme as points out. It makes a good case for something extreme, and I'm not sure it is that.
Extreme is fun.
Yeah, it is. Hey, it certainly gets people to talk about it. I think this is a pretty, you know, speaking of Samsung, I think this is a pretty cool little addition to LastPass. They updated their Android app to include fingerprint authentication support to the Galaxy S5, which, in my experience with the S5, I actually liked the fingerprint scanner. Most of the reviews that I read are people saying, oh, you know, it's not as good as the one on the iPhone, and it's not dependable or whatever, or you have to hold it with two hands in order to do it. You know, you can hold it with one hand and just store one of your fingerprints as your sideways thumb, and then boom, you have the ability to do it with one hand. I would love to be able to do this to get to my passwords and LastPass, because there's nothing like, you know, using the convenience of LastPass, but then still being slowed down because I have to type in my 25-character master password in order to unlock it and actually use it, which is great security, but I'd do this too. This would be fantastic. What do you think, Gina?
Yes, do want. That's the thing. I find myself typing in my master password and LastPass on the phone a lot more now. So, I like it. Love LastPass.
There we go. And Ron, how's your LastPass experiment coming along?
It's going slowly, but it's inching along. It's taken a lot for me to let go to a certain degree. for me, it's just the transferring of all my passwords into it. As I'm setting new passwords, I'm saving it. I made folders for here are my work passwords, which is my personal passwords and things like that. So I just need to spend more time with it. I discovered the settings pane on LastPass, the advanced settings. I was like, ooh, I need to go through all of these.
It can get deep. It can get deep really fast if you wanted to. Or it can stay pretty mellow.
So. But I dig it so far. So I got on my phone, I'm paying. I went through my trial and I'm paying my dollar a month or whatever it is.
Your whole dollar a month.
It's a cup of coffee.
For your security and peace of mind.
Exactly.
So. Real quick before we move on, I just want to point this out because I'm sure we're going to get some emails. I made a comment about the lottery system with the OnePlus. I was a little incorrect there. Ooh. My understanding was that it was a lottery that you destroyed your device and then it was a lottery afterwards. It's actually the opposite. They choose 100 applicants to be smashers. And then if you're chosen, you then destroy your device.
So that solves the...
So that's not a bunch of unnecessary smashing, but it's still kind of not necessarily responsible.
I wonder how many people have smashed their phone already.
I'll look on YouTube. There's a handful of people that have already done it.
Yeah.
Of course there are.
Of course they are. People will do it whether there's a contest or not.
But yeah.
Just for a little bit of internet fame. Paco Bell, thank you for keeping me honest
on that. PC load letter.
What does that mean? Okay.
Right. That's the printer action.
Before we move on, Silicon Valley, yay, nay, you guys watching it?
Yay.
It's like ridiculously awesome.
Really? Loving it.
Yes. Are you kidding?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's Mike
Judge. It's Office Space.
Oh my God. There has been one episode where I've been like, that was all right. The latest one, this is all, we should talk about this after.
Okay, okay.
The latest episode I thought was the worst, was awful.
Oh man. Yeah. I love this show. Yeah. I love it.
I've been really enjoying it. The last episode was the weakest of all of them so far, but
thank you.
I've been liking it.
Although I did finish the... Oh, see, we're totally getting off track.
But we are. I did that.
Yeah, this is all your fault. It wasn't me that time. It wasn't me.
Well, you do a PC load letter joke, and I can't help myself, okay?
I did watch... I was stuck at work for hours doing some work stuff on a weekend, and so I blew through betas. The Amazon show that is essentially the same show as Silicon Valley, and it's... essentially the same show, like down to like there are slight deviations, but like the generic plot of like guy comes up with an app, turns down a bunch of money, like you know builds it, like it's almost the same thing, and they're both awful.
Yeah, but it doesn't have Mike Judge, right?
The only good thing about Silicon Valley is also I think going to be the worst thing about Silicon Valley is that the guy who plays Peter Gregory is amazing, and unfortunately he passed away. After the fifth episode. Here I'm going to bring it down. But yeah, the actor who played Peter Gregory on Silicon Valley unfortunately lost his battle of cancer and passed away.
I didn't know that. So
I'm curious what they're going to do because honestly, he's the one where I'm like, ooh, I want another scene with Peter Gregory. Like that he's the, you know, so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Sesame Seeds.
That's sad.
Yeah. But anyway, sorry.
Sorry for the derailing downer. Conversation
wow.
that leads to the downer. Let's change course and get into the Android arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android arena.
It's a rough show.
This show is filled with ups and downs.
Well, here's an up that we're going
to
get to.
Oh, yeah. You feel like it's an up, probably. Let's see here. So last week we had two. Oh, it was the twofer. It was the twofer. It was one-on-one. It was one-on-one b-ball.
Two will enter, one will leave.
That's
just
right.
Just like the bumper says, right, Brian?
That's right, Ron.
Honestly.
That was a cue to play the bumper, but okay. Oh. So we won't do that. That's fine.
Hold on. That's fine. It's
how does he still have a job?
Because he makes up for it with pitchforks, all right?
I think I know which
so
one you want.
Tough on Brian.
That's the one you want.
Yeah, that's it. That was the one.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay.
Thank you, Brian.
He had the Office Space queued right up, so.
See, he's fast. He's fast when it counts. So Cross DJ did win, Ron. Actually, Easy Band Studio did better than I thought it was going to because I knew it was kind of limited limited to certain people who might find it useful. But Cross DJ is pretty awesome. Got to admit, 64% of the votes. Easy Band came in with the remaining 36%.
Yeah, where's the tally now, Wiki?
Where the tally at?
I've had this is like two wins in a row, right? This is my streak. I think this might be my longest streak ever.
Excellent. Well, keep it up. Yeah, we'll see if you can win three. Let's see. I don't think will you?
This week looks brutal, by the way. Totally looks brutal.
So my app this week, since I'm the loser, I will go first, is called Front Back. And
this is a family show, Jason.
Hey, not that. So what is Front Back? Front Back is basically an app and also kind of a social network in and of itself, but you can use it without the social component. And I thought the premise is kind of cool. And I believe it's been out on iOS for a little while. So it has a little bit of a built-in community aside, you know, from the fact that it launched last week on Android. But essentially what it is it's a way to use your front and then your back camera to capture a particular moment. So, for example, let's say me the other day I was at the TriCaster. That's the, you know, front-facing camera is me. Rear-facing camera is what I look at when I'm switching tech news today. So it just kind of captures a moment. It's kind of cool to look at what some of the people have in the gallery to kind of see what they come up with and wish that you were there, like this person snorkeling in a paradise land that I want to go to someday. This is kind of a creative use of it, right? Using both cameras but lining up the pictures so that it kind of creates one really long picture. You can like or heart the images that you really like as well. There's not a whole lot to get into here except the fact that you're sharing photos that show you both directions. So it's just kind of a way to expand your view of a particular moment. And of course, if you use cats, you're probably going to get a favorite from a lot of people. 2,457 people favorited this. So that's it. You can also search by nearby. I wonder if there's anything nearby in Petaluma right now. Let's see. This is Novato. This isn't too far away, although it's raining in this picture, so it probably wasn't recent, but it was definitely nearby. Sure, I'll give you a heart for that one. Why not? But there you go. So it's Front Back. You can take these pictures and share them on whatever service you want. Yes, user 1563 in the chat room says, a selfie app, and I suppose it's a selfie app.
Sure.
It's a selfie app with a little bit extra. You know, it's it's a selfie app. That also gives you the context of where you were when you took that selfie. There you go. Somebody else in the chat room says there's 40 different apps named Front Back. This is created by Front Back, so it's Front Back. Thank you. Wow. Okay, Brian, you win.
Pretty close. Brian has just,
Brian, yes. He misses Brian a cue, but then he bounces back.
He gets right back in it.
Yeah, I just miss Ron's cues.
Brian Burnett redeems himself with live video of Front
Live
Back.
Live Front Back.
Yeah, it's live Front Back from the Twit Studios. So, anyways, it is Front Back. It's by the developer Front Back. So, I mean, if you're having a hard time finding it through a search, you can just use the lower third QR code that we throw on. Or you can check out our show notes at twit.tv/AAA. Find today's episode and you'll find the link there. And I don't know. It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Good, cool little camera app. And I haven't seen that done before. So there you go.
Cool.
Front Back.
Front Back.
Front Back.
There's a band called the Front Bottoms. Think about that.
That sounds a little.
Okay. So my app is, if longtime viewers of the show might remember, a couple of weeks ago, I was wrestling with SMS apps as I've chosen to reject Hangouts for my life. For a while, I was using Textra. That was pretty good. I liked it. But I discovered a new SMS app that I've fallen in love with. So I thought, hey, since I'm in love, might as well bring my love to the arena. It is called Hello SMS. And it's honestly the SMS kind of app that I was looking for because it's got an innovative, different kind of approach to the design. It's got a tab based approach. And so what happens is here you can see on these screenshots here, you can see, basically the left side of the screen gets those round avatars that we've been talking about so much. So you can see who you're texting with.
They got the memo on that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can see who you're texting with, and then you can tap on the avatar, and that moves basically the viewer down to them. And there's a whole bunch of different custom. You can customize the look of it. You can have a light look or a dark look. I've got the app here, so I can kind of show it to you in real use. Although, don't read my text messages. But anyway, so. So what you hear, I'm going to put it on the Zipcar one. So here I've got this whole list on the left side here. I've got my contacts that I can scroll through. And then over there you see this is the actual text area. This is the Zipcar reminder of my car being due. But if you tap on that, it expands it, and I can either trash it or I can look at the card for that person or I can call them, put that back up. Go right here, typical place where you can type. Hit the smiley faces. You got all your emojis that you need. If I want to include a picture, I can either – it gives me a camera or I can go into my gallery. Very easy, different kind of a simple approach because normally when you say I want to attach a picture, it's like, okay, then you got to click again to go to the camera. Right, or click, you know. But in this case,
yeah,
I can just – yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, isn't that good? Yeah.
Saves you one click.
Yeah, exactly. But what's really interesting is that if you scroll through here, if you look at it, for example, it – I don't know how it does it, but like this is my text from Uber. It knows it was Uber and just pulled up an icon. I don't know how it did that. And then, like, I got, like, so here, Zipcar. It knew it was Zipcar and gave me the Zipcar icon.
Google Local.
It must be through, it must be using that or something like that. But T-Mobile did the same thing with Facebook. Yeah, I get it. No, they're not spam. These are all things. Let's not look at all my friends here. All right, so let's look at my password. But
all right, I guess I'll be. cut away.
Login is wrong.
But anyway, with my two-step verification on Facebook, it identified the phone number was coming from Facebook and showed me the Facebook icon as the icon. That was pretty neat. That was something I didn't even expect. Southwest. Here we go. You can see up here. It's got this, you know, so it's got the Southwest icon right there. You can see it, you know. So,
cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. It's really, really, really fast. The flow is really nice. Hit the hamburger button down at the bottom and you get to the settings. And there you can adjust whether there are in-app sounds, notification displays. You can specify your notification sound. You can set night mode. The whole development team signed it down there, and so that's pretty nice. There's a little bit of love. It is an app that feels very much as if they put a lot of thought into it and a lot of love into it. And how do you make the texting kind of experience kind of flow better? And I found myself it's a lot faster, a lot easier to scroll through different conversations. It's easy to get them going. Mm-hmm. The starting a new message and like so if I go to – if I'm going to send a photo – here, I can show you guys this. So here's my whole gallery, and I want to – let's say I want to – you know, I had a high pinball score, so I want to share that. And if I go to Hello SMS, it's really nice in that it shows you the screen to write the text message. It pulls up the photo, hypothetically, and then it also pulls up your contacts, and it gives like a better kind of posting screen. So here mm-hmm. I can go through – it lists the people who – it suggests the people who I normally text, and then if I want to search through my contacts, I can. So it's kind of smart in that way. It's a lot faster to get a photo text out. And it works really great. So Hello SMS, really good. It's free. And thank you, Brian. It's free in the it's free in the Google Play Store. So go check it out if you're looking for an SMS text replacement. It's the one that I'm using. I've ditched Textra, and now I'm on Hello SMS. Although we did get someone wrote in with a suggestion of a new app, which I'm going to check out. But for now, Hello SMS.
You are always on the hunt for SMS.
I love the SMS apps. I really do. I just want one that makes me feel that makes it feel fun. Yeah. So
there you go. That's Hello SMS.
Yes.
All right. Cool.
Very cool.
Derek, I installed your app, but I don't think it's – I think it's going to be lost on me because I don't have any data fed into it or a device to feed into it. So
Yeah.
We'll show it off from the screen.
That's probably going to look pretty horrible. Oh, okay. Yeah, you can kind of see it.
Yeah,
sure. That's not too bad.
All right. So my app is Fitbit. I've been using it for about a month now as I got a Fitbit wearable. So anyways – it will sync with Android devices 4.4 and higher automatically over Bluetooth, and it will allow you to track your let's see if you can see here at the top, it has my steps and the distance that I've walked, how many minutes I've been active. Obviously today I've only been active for 3 minutes, so I got to get on the ball, how many calories I've burned and so forth, and basically it allows you to manage your fitness in a geek way. It's basically a glorified pedometer, But it, like I said, it allows you to manage that. So you can go in, you can look at graphs, you can let me open that up there. So if I wanted to see what part of the day that I was more active than not active, I can look at my graph and find out. You can also look at graphs for your calories. You can swipe. Okay, you can't swipe there a lot. Let me go back here. So when you're tracking your distance and so forth, you can, there you go. You can swipe and see different days, swipe left to right. One thing about the UI I would like to have changed is I'm a big fan for apps that follow Android design guidelines, and this app has not a whole lot of recent designs. It really reminds me of Gingerbread UI elements, especially when you go in and you want to add what you ate for lunch or breakfast or dinner that day. When you get to choose your food or you're searching for your activity, the method for doing that isn't too new. It definitely looks like, you know, Gingerbread. But the functionality, I mean, it has functionality to be able to track all these things. You can track your sleep in it. Like I said, your food plan. And show you that UI fail that I was talking about. Like I said, I'm mean on apps that aren't you know, too hollow looking, and that's not Android hollow. Mm-hmm. But functionality wise, it works. It does its thing. I said you have to have Android 4.4 KitKat or higher for automatic Bluetooth syncing. One thing that really I would love to have on the app would be battery notifications when your Fitbit device is going to die or needs a charge. It doesn't pop up with a notification. However, you can open the app and look to see your battery's charge, but I would really like a notification to let me know. But thankfully, a developer came up with a third-party app that hooks into Fitbit and covers that for you. But hopefully in a future version, they allow those type of notifications. I think that, you know, it would be much nicer than finding out randomly that your battery's dead, that you're not going to be able to use your Fitbit the rest of the day. So it's a good app if you want to track your fitness and you have a Fitbit app. They do have other apps out there that work with Fitbit, but so far I've been using the default one. It's been getting the job done for me. Oh, also one last thing is they do have a friend stream in there, so you can taunt your friends to tell them that they're lazy or they did a good job for, you know, passing their step goal or their walking or running goal, you know, whatever that day, or they lost weight or something. So you can, you know, tell them kudos or congrats or call them lazy and tell them to get on the ball, or you can send them a message or a smiley face. So
or you can angrily unfriend them.
Or yeah, exactly.
that's my choice. Yeah, that's how I go.
Don't tell me what to do. Cool. That is Fitbit, the app for the wearable device, the Fitbit device. Excellent.
The original wearable.
Yeah, exactly.
I really feel right. It was the
OG.
Yeah, the I was going to say blaze the trail of wearables.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. And Gina, I have yours installed. I wanted to play around with it when I first saw that it launched. So I'm happy that you picked it because you can tell me kind of all the cool things that I can do with it.
Excellent. Cool. So my pick this week is IFTTT. If you're watching All About Android, you've probably heard of IFTTT before. It's if this, then that. It's been around really forever as a web app. It's kind of a beloved web app, IFTTT.com. And it just launched for Android. So I'm kind of pretty excited about it. There's now a brand new Android app that's both for phone and tablet. So the premise behind IFTTT, or if this, then that, is that there, you set up these recipes. It's very kind of Tasker-like, but much better designed and much easier to use, where you set up a recipe that is in the structure if this, then that. So if I save a photo to Instagram, then save it to my Dropbox, for example. If it's going to rain tomorrow, send me an email. You can really just chain together all of these conditional statements across all your personal services, Facebook, RSS, GitHub, Flickr, Foursquare, Gmail, Dropbox. I mean, really any web service that you use, IFTTT creates these recipes that can hang them all together and make them do custom actions kind of automatically. And now the Android app lets you chain together recipes and hook into your Android device, which is very, very cool. So you download the app. It's free. You sign in with your IFTTT account, which you can also create for free. And now there are a couple of hooks and a couple of recipes that are Android specific. And you'll see that there are a couple of recipes that are suggested for Android. So one example recipe for Android is you can say, automatically set my latest Instagram photo to be my device's wallpaper. kind of cool. Send me a push notification if it's going to rain tomorrow. Or if I come into this location area, like when I get to my office, make sure you mute my phone and put it on vibrate. So location services, you can access your wallpaper, you can get, you know, push notifications. It's a really, really, really nice interface. It's very easy to use. Like I said, it's kind of like Tasker. And actually, one of the people in the app reviews called it like a poor man's Tasker. I would call it a better Tasker. I would call it a simpler and more obvious, easy to use Tasker. And of course, these recipes aren't just for your Android device. You can have recipes that run kind of in the background that aren't connected to Android, but now with the app, you can kind of customize your Android phone using IFTTT. I've been having a lot of fun with it, just playing around with a couple of different recipes. This just got released, and there are, I think, some bugs to iron out. But this is the official app, and I definitely think it will get better. So yeah, that's it. IFTTT for Android. If this, then that.
Cool. There's one thing about Tasker is that it harnesses a lot of power, but you have to really
be
okay with getting a little nerdy with it.
You gotta fiddle a lot. Yeah. I think IFTTT has done such a good job of taking, you know, of giving a regular person an ability to program pretty complex actions in like a very simple structured way. Just if this, then that, these sort of amazing conditionals, but you can create these event triggers. And it's also very social. So you create an IFTTT recipe and then you can share it and then you can fork it and you can change it to, you know, to work for your own needs. And so there's this huge community of amazing recipes that get liked and faved and so the great stuff bubbles up top. And when you install the Android app, you get a couple recommended to you. It's just a really nice implementation, I have to say. Very consumer-friendly implementation of something that's really kind of nerdy.
Yeah.
This is like Tasker or Yahoo Pipes, which is a really old school way to do something similar.
Oh, I remember Pipes.
I remember Pipes.
Yeah.
Pipes was like the dream. I remember I used IFTTT years ago on the website of things back when I was at Rev3 because one of our coworkers really hated Twitter and always made fun of everybody for using Twitter and grumbled about it. So me and Mauricio actually both made an IFTTT recipe that every time he posted on his Twitter, we'd immediately respond, right? So that he always got a response. So just this automated thing. Yeah. So that was
nice.
That's an example of the things that you can do. So.
Torture your coworkers. Troll your coworkers with IFTTT.
Pretty much.
I really like with this app how easy it is to kind of share the recipes and everything. Yeah. Because with Tasker, I go through these, I have gone through these, you know, moments where I'm like, I think of this thing that I want to do, but I don't want to spend the time to figure out how to do it. So I go online to try and find like a Tasker thing that's already out there. And then just like coordinating that whole process and then bringing it on the device and loading it in. It's just this whole like convoluted thing, or at least it was the last time I did it. This really just kind of integrates it into the app, and that's kind of what the app revolves around, is that social kind of sharing of capabilities.
The recipe sharing is really cool, but IFTTT continues to be on the list of, oh yeah, when I have a free Saturday, I'll play with
right,
that.
Right.
And I never did.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So we have four apps this week: Front Back, Hello SMS, Fitbit, and IFTTT. You can go to AAAPoll.com/159 to place your vote for your favorite app. And yeah, it's kind of what I figured. IFTTT pulls out ahead early on with 64% of the vote. But
there goes
we'll
my
see
streak.
Where that. Well, you never know.
It's going to end up too.
You never know. You never know.
That's right. As we like to say every week, you never know.
You never know. That's what Brian says. That's what Brian says to me every week. You never know. You never know what's going to come up on that screen.
You never know what crazy thing he's going to do suddenly out of nowhere.
I have nothing.
Okay, good. Or nothing. See, you never knew that he wasn't going to do anything.
There you go. He leaves you guessing.
Keep you on your toes.
Yep. Exactly. Well, Derek Ross, it's been a pleasure having you on the show once again. Thank you so much for coming on and talking Android stuff with us today.
Yeah, thanks, Jason, and everybody. It was great to be here. I love to geek out and talk about Android, so it was very enjoyable. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Where can people find all of your work online?
Well, as I said at the beginning of the show, big Google Plus fan. So you can find me on Google Plus, Derek Ross, or you can find me on fandroid.com as well as Twitter, Derek M. Ross on Twitter.
Awesome stuff, sir. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Now, Ron, you have some
little news, little exciting news. Yeah, so I teased it last week. Was it in the post show? I think it was in the post show. It wasn't actually during the show. But yeah, so my day job, I get to work at the wonderful Image Comics at imagecomics.com, where we publish some of the best comics in the world. And today we actually launched our first partnership and kind of joint venture with the folks at Humble Bundle. So if you go to Humble Bundle right now, humblebundle.com right now, there's Image's website. That's our site. But if you go to humblebundle.com, the bundle for the next 2 weeks is a bundle of Image Comics digital comics. So you can pay your own price, and a portion of the proceeds go to charity. We're benefiting the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, which is a very important organization in the world of comics that helps people from that deal with, you know, kind of First Amendment and censorship and things like that. But yeah, so it's got 9 books involved in the bundle. So for just the low price of $15, you can get 2 volumes of The Walking Dead, plus Saga, plus Lazarus, plus East to West, some great comic books. And I got to be honest, this launched at 11 a.m. today, and I'm overwhelmed with the response. It's been amazing. I think we're up over $80,000 raised so far. So it's crazy. So
wow. Yeah.
So check that
good
out.
For you.
Yeah. So this is one that was definitely one I've been working on this since last summer. So it's been a long road. I saw all the love that Humble Bundle gets from, you know, from apps and video games and things like that, and said it was this would be a great way to get the word out about comic books. So go to humblebundle.com. You got 2 weeks to get on board with the bundle. And honestly, these are some of our best comics. So you won't there's something for everybody there. So I'm sure you'll enjoy it. So yeah, and then you can find more about me at about.me/RonXO with all the links to my Twitter and Facebook and funds like Google Plus and fun stuff like that. So,
sweet. Yeah. Well, thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Good luck with the Humble Bundle.
Yeah.
And Gina, what you got going on?
I am working on, when I'm not on Twit, I'm working on an app called ThinkUp, thinkup.com. It's social analytics for humans, and I'm really excited. We're launching a few new insights in the next, actually the first week of May, starting Friday, so I'm excited about that. It's open to the public now. Check it out. If you tweet, if you Facebook, if you want to know more about if you're wasting your time doing so, ThinkUp's what you want. And I also co-host This Week in Google here on the Twit Network, and that airs on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. So I'll be on tomorrow with Leo and Jeff Jarvis talking all things Google and sometimes a little bit of Android, too. So come on by and watch.
I have a good feeling you're going to be talking about Silver a little bit.
I think we will. Leo does kind of leave the bulk of the Android coverage to this show. But yeah, I think I'm sure that we'll mention it at least.
Yeah, there you go. The end of Nexus as a potential. I know when Leo came in this morning when we were talking about it on Tech News Today, and he thought that was a big deal. So you'll probably chat about it. And I just got to say, love ThinkUp. Continue to love to
ThinkUp is awesome.
To look at ThinkUp and kind of see how engagement is and everything like that. It's super cool stats.
Right on.
So everybody
thank you.
Check it out. You can find me at about.me/JasonHowell. Follow my musical exploits at yellowgoldmusic.com if you so choose. And that is it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Brian.
Thanks for the snuff, Jason.
You know what? Father Robert suddenly started looming, and I'm going to blame him because he threw me off.
He stole your thunder.
Did I do that bad tonight?
You did fantastic, Brian. What do people need to know about you?
They don't need to know anything. It's fine.
I'm sorry, buddy.
Padre was distracting you because we do a far more sinister show called Know How. On the Twit Network. Tune in Thursdays at 11. I forgot the time. Whatever. Good show, guys.
Thursdays.
I'll let you finish.
Have you been waiting 2 hours to do that bit?
If I had, I would have had more to say.
follow Brian on Twitter because he needs your help, obviously.
Desperately.
All right. Let's try that again. Sorry about that, Brian. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AA. Send us an email, AAA@twit.tv, or a video mail if you choose. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We're on Google Plus. We have a community there that's very active. Just search for All About Android on Google Plus. We have a subreddit, twitaaa.reddit.com, that helps inform us as far as the stories that you think are important for every show. And you can find show notes and past episodes at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find our episodes all over the map, YouTube, iTunes, all those places that you would expect to find the show. And you can catch us live 5 p.m. Pacific on Tuesdays, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.